you got Pac-Man?
No.
You got Space Invaders?
Nope.
You got asteroids?
No, but my dad does. Can't even sit on the toilet some days.
Ugh.
It is July 1989. Barry Bonds homers and ties his father Bobby's record at 408. The U.S. Supreme Court rules that states don't have to provide funds for abortions, and op-ed writers start sounding the alarm that Roe v. Wade could get overturned any day. But you're not too worried about that because this country has two political parties, and surely one of them has a plan to codify abortion rights they'll enact sometime between now and 33 years in the future, like when Democrats have a majority on the court and a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. Yep, you're just going to go ahead and move on to international news because Carlos Saul Menem has become president of Argentina the same week your dad sends you a postcard from Buenos Aires. He probably bought it at a bookstore or a travel agency or something because he knows Evita is your favorite musical. Yes, of course, that's all it is. This also alerts you that your dad does know where you have moved to, so should you expect another suitcase in another hall? That's an Evita reference. When he reunites with your mom? And if he does come home, will she even be here to greet him, or will she be out with Kathy again at their favorite night spot, Whispers? Before you moved, your dad promised he was going to take you and your mom on a road trip to some of this country's greatest natural wonders, but you're not sure what that would be like. Will he and your mom bicker the whole time because they're not used to spending time together? Will he keep taking you on country roads because he thinks he's going to catch a tail on the interstate, whatever that means? How can you take on the responsibility of keeping peace between supposed adults because, sure, that's your job? Fortunately, the latest issue of Sassy came the same day as your dad's postcards, and it has a whole article about exactly that, so why not pick up some tips? Yes, it's time to...
Listen to Sassy! You see, the intro clip was from the movie Vacation. That's the connection here.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It's been a very long time since I've watched that, since that was on in the background.
Literally the only thing I remember about that movie is that quote, because I saw it in an age where all those things were the only things that mattered, those video games. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even understand the joke. I didn't understand the joke about asteroids. That's how much I wanted to play those video games.
I just got it now. I still don't get into a pool without going, this is crazy first. It does have its moments that live in you forever. Mm-hmm.
What was happening in July 1989 in your life, Tara?
It was the last month of our last tour. After this month, I was never in band ever again.
Didn't we end this already?
This is the last time you ever have to hear about it.
Are you like the fucking Who? Is this like your 14th farewell tour?
No, this was the end of my band career forever.
Are we going to hear about your band again on this podcast?
I mean, it'll probably come up, but
chronologically, is it going to be 1991? It's like, band reunion!
No, there was never a band reunion.
There's Roger Daltrey.
No.
Let's do it.
Never happened. So at the end of the tour...
That was your band.
I know.
I don't think I got enough for that.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Thank you, Pam.
After our last show, I took my uniform boots, which is the only part of your uniform that you had to buy.
Uniform boots.
They're little white, like moon boots with Velcro straps. And I took them around to all of my friends, everyone I knew in the band, and I had them sign them like a yearbook. And then I remembered we still have to march in a parade in August. So I had to borrow a pair of uniform boots from one of my friends who was in color guard. Because
I've seen those boots, and all the signatures are things like, see you next year.
They're not. Did you just say in this story, there's more band to come in August of 89?
I don't remember anything that happened. It was one parade. Actually, it might have been in July now.
Come on.
That's the end.
You promised us it would be the end of the tyranny of the band stories.
These boots are made for talking. Yeah.
That's it.
Well, anyways, more band exploits to follow.
No.
Keep listening.
Our spine line this month is Robert plus Christina equals forever, because Robert Downey Jr. is on the cover, but we will get to Robert plus Christina equals forever some other time. Feature number one this month is not sad. Yay!
Two people do die, though.
Two people do die. but they had it coming.
Yeah.
Our feature number one is family vacations can be hell slash cross out scribble scribble fun. Yay! Mm-hmm. Our author is Catherine. Oh my God, I'm not even the one who's supposed to be introing this. I just went ahead and did it. I felt it. I felt moved. I felt called to bring up the family vacations.
It's
It is nice to have something fun up top.
It is. And it's not a bummer, other than the parts of the story that obliquely warn you, your parents might be taking you on the very last family trip before they announce their divorce, because there is a lot of content about, like, how to keep your parents away from each other, how to spend time with just one parent so that there isn't so much bickering between you and them or each other.
It's solid advice.
It is.
It really only takes one bad vacation for you to have only had one vacation as a family, which is what we only had once. Mm. One family vacation.
I don't remember any vacations like this. So I wonder if there's like one before I can remember that went disastrously wrong.
And that that's your sister ruined before you were born.
Could be. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that I could see it.
She doesn't listen. Yeah, we lived away from, you know, one or the other of my parents for my childhood. So whenever we would go away, it was usually to visit them in Winnipeg, also a funny place name, not as funny as Regina, or in Mississauga after they moved. And then I think the first time we had like
you mixed up and you put your Winnipeg in your Regina.
And you get it was real Mississauga.
Yeah,
this is what happens.
We did go to Disney World when I was in grade 12, and that was like the first sort of vacation of this sort that I ever took. I think my aunt and uncle took me to Ladysmith at some point when I was a kid. I went places with them, but not with my family. Probably because my sister and I were 7.5 years apart, and that's just not convenient fun for anyone.
Are we supposed to know what Ladysmith is? Am I supposed to know what that is?
In BC.
Pardon me?
It's Canadian.
It's on Vancouver Island.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is Canadian. You're right. Yeah. Ladysmith polishing their vaginas.
So the first chunk is about how to cope if your dad, it's very gendered, but, you know, wants to keep you on a really aggressive schedule where you're just looking at a lot of stuff. And I just want to say, Pam and I have both vacationed with Dave together. Mm-hmm. This is how the name Plan Dad evolved. Dave likes to, he's a planner.
Yeah.
And so, this rang true to me, Pam.
I just want to defend myself a little bit. And honestly, just a little bit. It's not that I'm a planner. It's just that I hate vacations where you don't do anything.
Yes.
So it wasn't so much that I felt the need to plan it. I just wanted to make sure we saw things. I know that sounds like the same thing, but there's an important difference there.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And it's also why you get frustrated, because you have things that we should see, but we may not get to see all of them. And you get frustrated that perhaps the plan that's not a plan might not happen because there's still things to see. So let's just see this thing so we can see the other things that we need to see, because there's a lot of things to look at. So just glance at that one, get back in the car.
I mean, I hate to say it, but that is an absolutely accurate depiction of the Hawaii vacation we were on.
If we wanted to have a fill week on the podcast, I would say, let's put up the podcast we recorded on that trip, the Tandoori Lady episode.
Okay, I still have it.
Because that really covers it. A lot of the slob tube.
Then we could also throw in three types of cookies. There's more than one traveling plan. Mm-hmm. An eating plan has extra regret plans.
Yeah.
Just look at the food. We can't eat this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're the type of person that can pay money to go to a different part of the world and then just sit by the pool or on the beach in that part of the world, and that is your vacation, well, more power to you, but also you're wrong.
And this has been an issue, because that's the kind of vacation I enjoy taking.
That's what Tara likes to do.
The compromise is usually we'll do like a day of stuff followed by a day of not stuff.
Yeah.
Hotels all the way.
Yeah, exactly. But sometimes the day of not stuff is like I'm in the room with a migraine and Dave wanders off somewhere in Maui to this abandoned warehouse and almost falls through the floor taking pictures because it was all rotten and you could have died.
If I fell down and broke something, it could have been weeks before somebody else went into that building.
I didn't know where you were.
Nobody. Got some good photos though.
He did.
I should give you those photos for the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice being the middle of that, I have to say, because Tara would be like, do you want to do nothing today or something? Mm-hmm. And then she'd lay down with a stack of magazines. And then David put a camera around his neck. And then I could just, what do I want to do, nothing or something? Yep. It was great. Mm-hmm. That's who I am. Are we doing nothing or something today? I'm ready for either. Just tell me how much clothing I am or I'm not wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you'll hear in that podcast that we recorded, the saddest day was when we went to look at stars. And we had to leave the beach where we were warm and toasty, get on a bus with the grossest, most sexist man that ever lived, who was our tour guide.
Yeah.
And then drive up to look at some clouds while he described where the stars would be if it was not overcast that night.
Really? And it was like, thank you for your $80 per person or whatever it was.
I had to get out of the van and drink hot chocolate and stare at nothing while he told us what we should be seeing now. Because much like Plan Dad, he still had to keep us on a schedule.
Yeah.
As I remember, I mean, not to get into double tangents here. But the reason why that guy was particularly bothersome was because, yeah, he was sexist, but all of it was wrapped up in like this lounge comedy act thing he had going on, where it was like he was making jokes about women via Cassiopeia.
Cassiopeia, yes.
Yeah.
And Pele.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was just like, come on, dude. And like, he was getting a couple laughs from the raisins in the front of the bus, but largely bombing, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But the hits just kept coming.
Anyway,
yeah,
we should, if we are going to put this up in the feed,
I got a picture of Pam looking behind because she's in the seat in front of me, looking behind me like, "What's going on with this guy?" It's one of my favorite photos from that trip.
Anyways, back to this article.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I brought it up. It's my fault.
Yeah, it really is your fault. You should be apologizing.
It wasn't in the plan.
Speaking of apologies, one of the things Catherine wishes she had done when she was in D.C. was to get a hot dog and sit and look at the Vietnam Memorial. Which I think is what Maya Lin had in mind.
The one thing I know about those communists, the first thing they're going to get rid of are the hot dogs.
For a few hours, she gets a hot dog, plops over, and just for a few hours, letting it sink in.
You know what she does? She goes there. She sits right in front of the memorial. She starts reading names. Oh, I bet he would like a hot dog. Bet he would like a hot dog, too.
This needs mustard. I'll be right back.
Their sergeant would like a hot dog. They can't eat hot dogs no more.
But truly, like, there's so many of these stories that she's solicited from the other writers and editors that are like, the worst time I ever had on vacation because my family that I was traveling with wanted to murder each other. Like,
yeah.
Given that, you know, Mary Kay is telling a story of going on vacation with her mom and her mother's family and like how tense it was between them, which is like, why would Mary Kay's mother want to go on this trip knowing that they had a lifetime of difficult relationships? You know, like, why would you want to spend a month on the road in England?
Because time is precious, Tara, and everyone will die eventually. So get in the car and just make a memory or nine because look, it's a lasting thing.
I guess
it is very good. There's crazy advice in here, which is see if you can bring your boyfriend.
Well, I mean, you might as well try.
You think I could bring my boyfriend so that when you guys are lame, I have someone to make out with? No. What? I guess some cool parents are like, yes, bring Charles. He'll be great. You guys have just share a room. Who cares? I'll be in the other room with my wine. Charles will hook it up. And then there's also good advice, which is just like bring someone else, just someone else, because I think, as we have proven here, someone else is great. Cause you'd be like, you guys can bond over, oh my God, we have someone else. And then you can also bounce someone else back and forth. You end up having a good time because someone else will do the things that your family doesn't want to do, or at least just the constant scapegoat.
Yeah. Now I'm remembering another time that my parents rented a cottage somewhere in Saskatchewan by a lake, and they did let me bring a friend. I'm not going to say her name, but that was the last time I was ever permitted to bring a friend because both of my parents were like, she was a know-it-all. She contradicted every single thing we ever said. She was miserable to have on our vacation, and that was it for bringing
720 people. Sassy Go, are you listening? I would love to hear your side of the story.
She was kind of a know-it-all in my parents' defense.
Well, then she'll know what happened. Here we go. We whiplash. You know we're going to do it. We're going to whiplash over to what he really means when he says no, ladies, which also a little offensive to begin with. Okay, so Karen Catchpole writes an article that begins with, don't even bother asking your friends if this has ever happened to them. They'd never admit it. And it's not like it's ever happened to me or anything. But since I love you guys, I did a little research on the subject of how, and more importantly, why guys say no. And this is how I deal with it if it ever did happen to me, knock on wood. There's a bunch of reasons that this guy might say no to you when you are brave enough to ask him to date you or be your boyfriend or anything like that. And this article made me sad and exhausted for, I've heard all of these no's.
Every single one.
Yeah. Some, you know, I've heard a lot of no. And that is because I'm bold enough to ask.
Yep.
Sometimes you don't even have to ask. They just tell you no before you get a chance. They don't mention that one in this article, but sometimes there's a preemptive no where you'll be like, hi. And then they're like, no.
Yeah. I can see that this would be sort of comforting. Like some of them are like, he's just not ready for girls yet, which may be true, especially for readers of this magazine.
Or ever. And they didn't really go into that of like, he might not ever be into you, not just you, but the concept of you.
Right.
Yeah. It does go from like, well, you know, if he's already got a girlfriend, you know, move on. If he thinks he's supposed to make the first move, maybe he sucks. But if you really like him, I mean, go ahead and lower your standards. He just wants to be your friend. They're like, well, you know, just keep at it unless, you know, but also remember, friends are forever and a boyfriend is not. He just needs a few more weeks. That was the one where I was like, what?
Like, wear him down.
Wear him down. And you know what? That's tried and true. I'll tell you that. It works. Ladies, you can wear him down, but eventually he will get the strength to say no again. He just needs a few more years. Sad, but true. It's, you know, this is the one where they're like, it's just possible he's not ready. He's just young and women mature faster than men. And so it's possible he's like, a girl, what? Yeah. And then like later he's like, oh, he's just not in the mood. No, which is like, I like this one because it's like, maybe he said no, because he's having a bad day and he doesn't want to make out with you and just see it from his point of view. Remember some days when you were just like, I don't want to today, ask me why. And then it's all like, because if you get him talking, you know what that leads to? A making out. Like that's definitely what he thinks when he asks, why are you in this mood?
Yeah.
He's just a little bit scared to death. You know, that's true. And it just says, you know, just be real, real quiet with the kitten. And and see if he'll come closer. And then the really, no, really, like he's not into you. He's either kind enough to say, this is never going to happen, or jerky enough to be like, pass. And in which case, just walk on by. So these are all the ways that he really, what he really means when he says no, which I think he was clear in all of these.
Yeah,
you were right. It just made me say, I felt so bad for the person who kept getting up and trying. I just assumed it all happened to one person. I don't know why I made that assumption, but I saw them all happen in one semester and I put the magazine down for a little while.
But Pam, look at you now. You're married.
Look at me now. You're married. You just said that like my mom's friend. Look at you now.
You're married.
You're married.
To a man who listens to your podcast, Pam.
He does. You know what, girls? He does listen to my podcast. And I know not everybody can say that about their mains. Shout out to Jason. It's true. That's true. He listens to my podcast.
He listens to you all day, and then he listens to you some more to find out what you were saying when you weren't talking to him.
Now you sound like my mom. He's so patient, I must say.
I mean, he just is with you all the time. Page 70 in your hymnals is, we're going to find out who won the fiction contest. Winner number one, first place, who won how much money, Tara? How much did our
$1,000. That's like writing almost four It Happened to Me's.
It's like real money, particularly back then. Like, yeah, this is no joke. I wonder if Gail Ray Gibson had to pay some taxes on this. She had her first.
She invested it in her music career. And years later, she wrote that song. That was a hit of the summer.
Gail Ray Gibson?
Yeah. Call me maybe.
Kaylee Ray Gibson. Yeah.
Nice. Well, Back Porch Ideas is a good short story, and Gail earned every penny of her $1,000. And this, yep. I have no notes. Gail, I hope you're enjoying your life in Detroit. This as much as I've doxed you. And Gail had everything in this short story that was going for her. She spends most of it being embarrassed about her mom, just talking about how gross it is to look at her and why boys won't like her if they come around. And then she thinks about boys and one boy in particular, and will this boy one day like her? And then mom talks about how her dad loved her, and she's like, I wish my mom drank the right kind of lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. But the fact that it's about, it's porch culture. I think we definitely mm-hmm. need a call from Front Porch Kelly on her mm-hmm. thoughts on this piece.
I'd like to hear it.
So we also get the second place winner. This is Goodnight Pigskin by Cheryl J. Family. I was more emotionally invested in this than Pam, I think. Pam seemed more upset. I was sad.
I don't know what it's about, but it sounds like a Supertramp song.
Good night, Pigskin.
Good night, Front Porch. I hope you have
good night, Pigskin. That's forever now. Yeah. Going to be in my head when I get out of the shower. Good night, Pigskin. Yeah. Cheryl J. Family.
Yes. Cheryl J. Family is our author. $500. She wins $500. And so this is a story of a boy calling your house. It's the wrong number, and you end up phone flirting over a matter of months. And do you meet or do you not?
This really sounds like a Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movie pitch.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really more like Sliver because he's so
oh,
gross.
I see.
He's so
all
gross.
In the treatment. You can take the same basic ingredients. You make a horror. You can make mm-hmm. a comedy. You can do a lot of things.
Absolutely. But what Cheryl, Miss Family, is doing here is this guy's so gross. He's so mean to her. He doesn't talk to her. He wants to teach her so much about sarcasm and stuff. He calls her, and the only time he will talk back to her is if she is just as mean and gross back at him. And so he's just negging and playing the game with her the entire short story. But it's got all these lines in it that are so, like, I'm not saying that Cheryl shouldn't have won. This is a compelling story.
Yeah.
This is pre-internet Stranger Danger fanfic, mm-hmm. and there's nothing bad about it.
Well, but the resolution is no resolution. Like, they agree to meet, and then she uh-huh. goes there, and she waits for a really long time, and she's as right. she's leaving, she sees a guy and somehow knows it's him late.
Yeah.
But she continues to leave, and then he never calls again.
She doesn't tell us why. They know. They're playing it with us, Tara, at the end.
Oh, it's right. I guess.
He stands her up for 25 full minutes. She knew it was him. She felt it. Their eyes met and held. She could feel a burning sensation in the pit of her stomach. He was staring intently. She let a tear slip onto her cheek. She turned and walked away. So they know. They're like cousins or something. And so, like, they can't be together. Like, she knows.
Okay.
Nothing is nothing, right? Nothing is nothing. He has her write on a piece of paper, nothing is nothing, so that she can learn that that's the kind of sentence that can be taken both ways, as Dave has pointed out, Meg yes. Ryan or Sliver. Uh-huh. Nothing is nothing or nothing is nothing.
Right.
And here they are. And so she's replaying what could have happened. And she says, if they had met, she didn't think they should meet because she thought it would ruin things. And then he says, it still doesn't change what we've said. And now she's like, it changes what we could have said. That's what I mean. Like, they know each other. They know we know they know. Since they spend 1.5 hours on their first phone call, that is so specifically teen. We've seen them say like six lines, and then she looks at the clock and it's been 1.5 hours.
And one of the things he asks her in that first meeting after they have, after he's been just hot breathing, calling her for 3 months is, what do you want to name your kids? No boy has ever asked that. What do you want to name your kids? And she says, she feels like it's dire information. It's just, it's so, yes, it's so right on.
I misunderstood. I thought she was going to name her kid Dire Information, which is pretty metal. I bet that kid grows up to lead the Smelters.
Dire is a good name for a kid. Yeah. I'd spell it with a Y. Mm-hmm. It's how to flirt when you're 14. And I guess I really liked this story.
Well, good news, Pam. While you guys were talking, I sold the rom-com treatment to Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan to make a film out of it. We have to figure out a title. So I'll give you some options. You guys vote for which title will be the one. Is it going to be called Dial Tone? Is it going to be called Reach Out and Touch Someone? Ring to Ring, Smooth Operator, or Baby Bell, because the female character is called Bell.
I like Ring to Ring.
Ring to Ring it is.
I do. Because you can see the poster.
Or Greyhound 2.
It's set in the 80s. It can have like the spiral phone cord, and then it's tied around her finger, and that's where the ring is. But the problem is, Cheryl J. Family works for Viacom and is a fancy writer person, and she will sue your ass.
We can't sell it to Paramount, that's for sure. She is currently senior vice president of creative and strategy.
What if instead of a telephone call, we set it in the past and they're communicating via telegram?
Ooh.
And the title is in Morse code.
Side note, Cheryl, in case you do listen to this, truly you're a sassy girl. She created her own job and her career from a one-week writing gig proofing the MTV Video Music Awards program and turned it into, a 30-year career at Viacom. Way to go, Cheryl.
Play your body talk. Muffins! Hi. Did you know muffins are cake? That's the first story.
I did. I love muffins.
There's truly no more cursed knowledge than when you find out muffins are not healthy. They are cupcakes that don't have icing. It's like the episode of Seinfeld with the non-fat yogurt. Mm-hmm. Where everyone's so excited. It's so good. You can't believe it's non-fat. And then someone finds out it isn't non-fat and everyone's just mad.
First, there were muffins. Then there was no low-fat yogurt. And then there was Pirate Puffs. Remember
Pirate's Booty.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like, Pirate's Booty, 2 calories per ton. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, nom, nom, nom. Oops, we meant 2 ton of calories per 2 puffs. Oops.
Yeah, snack wells are in there somewhere.
But you remember, like, but then there was, we experienced muffin inflation over the 90s, where muffins started off as this, like, you know, if you made an okay sign, you can kind of fit the bottom of a muffin on top of that. But now the muffins, you need like 2 heap and handful, you know, size, because they're like the ones you get at Costco. They're like, you have, like, you could put them in the back seat to weigh down your tires in the winter snow. They're so big.
Yeah, the ones in the picture are actually kind of dainty looking. Yeah. It's only like the fifth one down, or I guess second up from the from the bottom, that looks like a muffin you would buy commercially.
If you put today's modern super muffin on top of this picture, it would smother all of those muffins into like a muffin patty.
God damn, I want a muffin.
By the way, how come we don't have muffin patties where you can put a muffin in something else where the muffin is the meat of something even more delicious? Like you get 2 slices of cinnamon toast.
Yeah.
And then you put a muffin in between and eat that as a sandwich.
Like a termuffin.
Wouldn't the muffin be the bread and you would put something between 2 muffins?
No, because the muffin. No, wait. No, I have an answer for you.
Okay.
I really cinnamon toast versus second. Muffin. Muffin is the less sweet. So that I feel like should go in the middle, like meat.
Mm. Okay.
I think you put I think you put the muffin in the middle, which, by the way, great 90s television show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, maybe. Remember to keep your eyes closed for about 3 minutes after putting in eye drops. Otherwise, most of the medication will get pumped out by your blinking eyelids. Here's my answer to that. No. I can't keep my eyes closed with eye drops.
This woman doesn't have time to change a tampon. She's certainly not going to close her eyes for 3 minutes in a row.
Are you crazy? Can anyone do this, though, physically? It would be like sneezing with your eyes open. Like,
I wonder what's happening in the world.
No.
Have you ever closed your eyes for more than 3 minutes?
No, I'm saying that when there's eye drops, like your eyes involuntarily blink.
Super FOMO.
Shut up.
Dang,
that's not what I'm saying, you dick.
Is Biden still president?
Is he? Did you hear something?
Are the muffins here yet?
I feel like my eyes have been closed.
How big
years.
Are muffins now? It's been 3 minutes since I last saw the world. You open your eyes, the whole room's just a muffin. We live in a muffin now. We gotta eat our way out.
Oh gosh. 3 minutes is a long time to close your eyes.
There's the
drops.
Movie. Oh my god.
Tara's not even here anymore.
Tara
went to go get some muffins.
I'm just waiting for you to be done. I explained what I meant. You guys kept
I know
riffing.
What she said what she
I
said.
Explain what I meant.
God damn it. I did explain what I meant. Fuck my dick.
What you meant is the thing that we're laughing about.
The, yes. Well, you are supposed to keep your eyes closed for some time.
No, but wait. No, you did say what you meant. What you said was, wouldn't you keep blinking because you put something in your eye? Is that what you said?
Yes. That your eyes involuntarily blink.
That's why you close them. You put the stuff in and then you close your eyes and then you just do that.
You luxuriate in the moisture.
Count to...
And don't worry about what's happening in the world. The world will move on regardless of whether your eyes are open or not. When you come back to the world in 3 minutes, it is what it is, Tara. Don't
also,
worry about it.
Popcorn will be done in the microwave. Same amount. Yeah. Just hit start, close your eyes. Yeah. You have clear eyes, full
bag. You can listen to New York Minute 3 times while you wait. How come New York Minute actually isn't a minute long? How come he didn't do that?
Okay. Right. We better move on. Tara's We've so been mad. Here longer than an eye drop.
Oh, we gotta... taking a screenshot of that. Cyclists who ride with headphones.
So fear of flying.
I have the next one, too. I don't know if I want to do it anymore.
I'll do it for you.
It'll only take a minute.
Wait. Okay, wait. Okay, ready. Right. You do it. I'll do a countdown. We'll reset. And then you just go into it, Tara, and I'll help. Okay, ready? Okay. 3, 2, 1. Okay, me and you, Pam, close our eyes while she does it.
If you have a major fear of flying, mm-hmm. here are some things you can do to help combat it when you go on vacation. Ask a pilot or flight attendant to explain how a plane is actually able to fly. I dare anyone to do this and not get kicked off the plane in irritation. Ask the pilot to explain to you the physics of aeronautics? Fuck you.
If I have to open my eyes, I know it's only been like 45 seconds, but I have anxiety.
I can't stand it
anymore. I can't take it. Tara's right. Oh, my God.
Woo! Oh, my God.
This month's On the Road is in Las Vegas, and...
It's the ultimate garbage town! And I will not apologize. Everybody knows it's a fact. Even if you live there, you know... Oh, shit, Dave's right. I do live in the ultimate garbage town. Even if you're in Henderson, you know Las Vegas is still the ultimate garbage town.
I believe it is the place I have been to the most, and not once have I been there voluntarily. Not once.
Right?
In my whole life, have I ever gone to Vegas by my idea.
I am a firm believer that everybody on Earth should go to Las Vegas at least once in their life, because it is a singular experience mm-hmm. of confusion and bewilderment and hunger and getting lost and angry and upset. And where am I going to eat? Why is everything made out of meat? I hate gambling. Why am I here again? everybody said this and that was free. Nothing's free here. What's going on? I hate this place. They did, however, have the world's largest air hockey table, which I appreciated.
Yeah, they have a lot of ultimates, including your ultimate regret. You will have that in Las Vegas. This month's on the road, though, is like just bullshit. Like they must have been drunk and lost all their money or something, because this is some brochure knowledge. There's nothing. You will learn nothing from this on the road. Where you won't even see a picture where you'll learn something. This is boring shit. And what's interesting about the people who live in Las Vegas, I think, are the people who live in Las Vegas, not on the Strip. Like, this was an opportunity to talk.
How do you get from the Strip to anywhere else but the Strip in Las Vegas? That's the thing. It's like Escape from New York, where they turn Manhattan into a giant prison and they just like erect 50-foot concrete walls. Like, Las Vegas on the Strip feels like that. Like, you actually can't really get out of it. It's really hard to like figure out ways to get outside of the Strip by design.
Well, this was like when I'd go to New York and I was always in Midtown and everybody would be like, oh, God, I don't, you can figure out how to get to Brooklyn. I am not coming to you. I don't care how many hours you've been on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One train, but no.
The most universal thing I've heard, and I'm not making a joke about Las Vegas that everybody says, is however long you think you want to go there, take off 2 days. And that's what you book your trip for. You're going for a long weekend, your trip's actually going to be 2 days.
Mm-hmm. There's too much. There's too much oxygen. There's too much sun. There's too many people. There's too much drinking. Too much gambling.
Journey from your hotel room to outside is too much.
Too much.
Like, absolutely. It literally takes 20 minutes. And then, like, I get lost 3 times going through the casino. Again, I realize by design, but I fall for it every time. Like, where am I? Where are the elevators up to my room is something you will ask 6 times minimum on your trip to Las Vegas.
Anyway, Hacks is back on. You guys don't miss it. Once It Happened to Me is a busted by narc story that I'm just going to go ahead and bust right now as a bunch of bullshit, but that's fine. Stacey, 18, used to think 21 Jump Street was so unrealistic until she was busted by one of her quote unquote classmates. It's just not written in any kind of way where you believe that Stacey is a real human. Stacey tries to be friends with the new girl at school, who then is like, hi, do you guys know where weed is?
And they're like, we're not really doing.
Hello, fellow kids. Can I have weed? She also asks for wire, which I don't know what that is. What is wire? She said, party, are we party animals? At lunch, she would ask me and my friends if we knew where to get some killer weed or wire. She would tell us it was for her boyfriend who was coming to see her for the weekend.
Well, the problem is when you try to Google wire drug, everything that comes up is about the show The Wire.
Yeah.
So if you know, call us at 720 Sassy Go. I agree this story is probably fake, but I will say the last time it came up that we were talking about do schools still have narcs, whenever that was. And I linked to the This American Life story about someone who their girlfriend mm-hmm. turned out to be a narcotics, undercover narcotics cop. It basically was this, where it's like she like wormed her way into a friend group and then started asking like, hey, do you guys know where to get drugs?
Sure.
So it is entrapment, basically.
This doesn't seem legal at all. But then it's the way that everything happened after that sounds fake, because So Cindy tells Jill she can get her some weed, and then Jill gives her $40 and is like, you give this money to that person and then that person will give the weed to you and I won't touch any of it, which is I think the first thing that they should have been like, why are we the only ones touching all the drugs? Mm-hmm. Then a bunch of policemen show up. She gets called to the office and she was under arrest for transportation of less than 28.5 grams of marijuana to an undercover officer while on school grounds. She says, along with me, 10 other students got arrested, including Cindy, of course. After the vice principal read me my rights, he gave me a paper to sign telling me that I was suspended from school for 5 days. I signed the paper and they told me I could leave. I walked home very confused and scared. I couldn't believe this was happening to me. I felt embarrassed that I trusted Jill with my most private secrets, only to find out she was 26 years old and a cop. A few days later, the school board called an expulsion hearing with me and my parents, where I had to explain what had happened. I'll never forget the look of disappointment on my mother's face. The next day, I was expelled from school. The only good part was that out of the 10 who got arrested, I was the only one who didn't get taken to jail. For my whole last semester, I went to this thing called independent study, which basically meant every Monday I'd go pick up assignments, do them at home, and drop them off the next Monday, and that she couldn't go to prom and grad night and graduation, all these things. What?
how many friend groups was Jill in that she entrapped a total of 11 students in this scheme? Is A.
Right.
B, I wonder if it was that everyone else got arrested because they were over 18. And like Stacy was under 18 at the time that this happened. But I also don't understand, like, why is the vice principal reading you your rights? That's not the vice principal's job.
Absolutely.
And if they're arresting you on school grounds, they don't call your parents? Like, what the fuck? It's weird that it's not until a couple of days after all this happens that her parents are even mentioned.
Yeah. The first thing that made my jaw drop, though, was in the second paragraph. It says, I noticed that there was a new girl in my third period economics class, as well as my fourth period interior decorating class. And I was like, what fucking school do you go to with an interior decorating class? Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
That's why she thinks you can get her drugs. Richie. But anyway, I just commented that this seems like a scared straight program where at the end they're like, this could be you. And then if they told me that the vice president stops reading her, the vice principal stops reading her rights to go, would be what would have happened if we were all yes. real narcs.
Yes.
Now go back to class. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Bisexual friend. I just found out that one of my closest male friends is bisexual. I know this may sound like a really ignorant question, but exactly how does bisexuality work? Can my friend be attracted to girls one day and guys the next? Also, what should I do if a girl confides in me and tells me she has a crush on my friend? Should I tell her he's bi or should I encourage her to ask him out? First of all, don't tell anyone about anyone else's sexuality. That's not your thing to tell. But in the answer, some people act on their bisexual urges, but a lot of others don't. If a friend of yours likes this guy, don't tell her he's bisexual. That is for him to discuss with blah, blah, blah. And since you don't know the strength of his bisexuality, it might not ever be a problem. I know the Kinsey scale is a thing, but putting it that way sounds so funny to me. It's like an SPF. But for bisexuality or like the Scoville scale or something.
Yeah. SPF. It's like Shazam.
Yeah.
Just like, boys, girls.
Douching and sex. I read in an instructional booklet in a condom package that if a condom breaks and sperm spills out during intercourse, the woman should douche immediately. Is this right? A, no. B, no, you didn't. Because a condom package would not tell you that. It's not true. Me and my brother want to try a different religion than we were brought up with. How do we explain this to our parents? What if they don't let us switch? This, I know they have to edit letters down and that the ones they get are probably like 10 pages long, but this was edited too much. I need to know what religion you're switching to, what religion you're switching from, what made you want to switch, because this is a very different answer if it's we're Baptist and I want to convert to Judaism versus we're Catholic and I want to be a Scientologist. Like, this is too vague.
It also says they want to try it.
Yeah.
And that makes me think that they have friends who need them to be in trying their religion so that they can all go on field trips together and hang out at the same lock-ins. So they just want to try it. Like, they don't want.
Yes.
I just want to try where he goes to church.
Mm-hmm.
Get a sample spoon.
Yeah, so to that point, it probably is not switching to Judaism because they don't try to recruit.
No sample spoons there.
Nope.
The last one, I don't know what that means. The last one is tanning booths. And I just want to bring it up. The question is, are tanning booths dangerous? Answer, yes. We all know that. But just the fact that they existed, still exist, really is like our generation's like, oh my God, can you believe back in the day, stupid past people used to drill holes in their skull?
Yes.
Those dummies. Anyways, let's go to the tanning salon and cook our flesh. And I'm sure there's something today that we're all doing that's going to be just like, you know,
yeah.
Well, congratulations. You've all burned holes in your crotches from your phones or whatever, you know.
Bonafide makes a gut probiotic, speaking of.
I put my phone in this Bonafide container. It helps.
This month's What He Said asks several boys and Michael Stipe, what woman has had the biggest influence on your life? Mom gets a high number at 44%, friend 25%, girlfriend 21%, and sister 10%. And when I was younger, I didn't really have a like anger attitude, eye-rolly thing about Michael Stipe, nor did I have like a crush on him in any way. He was just sort of there. Mm-hmm. But when I read Michael Stipe's things now, I understand why people just even like 2 years older than me were like, ugh. He says, every woman I've ever met, certainly those I've been close to, have had a colossal impact on me intellectually and emotionally. And I'm just like, every woman you've ever met.
Yeah.
Yes!
The woman who gave you pizza.
I went to Target and the cashier was there and I was like, oh.
And she has had a colossal impact on me intellectually and emotionally.
It's when like, she told me I couldn't use my bags that I brought because they couldn't handle
like,
them.
And I was like, that was like a colossal impact on me emotionally and intellectually. She was like, your order is ready. And I was like, this is having a colossal impact on me emotionally and intellectually. Anyway, his love is general over specific, which is, again, my love is general over specific is some bullshit some boy tells you before by the way.
I think at this point, it wasn't known that he was not really into girls is part of it, probably.
Oh, okay. That's fine. That's fine. Then just, but my love is general over specific, but outstanding, I would have to say, is my grandmother Stipe. She speaks her mind and always has, but with genuine compassion and love. And then he's looking at me like, wearing a big giant stopwatch clock with his hat.
And his shirt, that's every couch from IKEA during this time.
Yes. Yeah. And he's looking at me like, you can't date me.
Howard, 17, says the most influential woman in his life is his old girlfriend, Oni. She's 2 years older than I am. She taught me things about not acting like a child. She set me straight about silly things that I used to do with girls, like getting jealous and being really petty. Actually, she broke up with me because of my pettiness. Yep. Cover story on Oni. She sounds great.
That's where the song Oni the Lonely came from.
Yeah, we're all Oni fans now. Mm. Howard.
Wow.
Carl, 19, says, it's my ex-girlfriend, Marlene. And then they say, says Carl, Sassy's ultra foxy janitor. And I just hope that Carl got paid a lot of money to be in the corner here as the, quote, ultra foxy janitor.
He is foxy, though.
He is foxy. I'm not denying the facts. I just think that they were like, put Carl in it. Carl, well, you're in it. It just feels like he got pulled in.
He's a teen.
He's a teen. Yes. And so his ex-girlfriend, I love all these ex-girlfriends. They're like, I have a lot of regrets. And yes. The best woman in my life is the prior woman in my life. I will marry the next one. And the next one will have a much better treatment because of Oni and Marlene.
Yeah.
Women who got away.
Who I fucked over. And
I really fucked
and
over.
And I learned a lot.
She had a colossal impact on me emotionally and intellectually. So I let her go. You wrote because yay.
Yep.
Lauren Stressner of Lancaster, Pennsylvania writes, reality is the quiz next period, the English paper due on Monday, the college application with an approaching deadline, a prom without a date, and the 10 pounds that I gained thinking about it. Illusion is the honor roll, college admittance, an amazing body, and a date with the football captain. Where do reality and illusion mesh?
In Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
That definitely felt like a assignment she turned in and then sent it to Stuff You Wrote.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty dark.
Dark. Speaking of dark.
Speaking of dark, Anonymous. Is evil something you are or something you do? Anonymous. Walnut, California! I got nothing to say about the content. I just enjoyed the fact that after that, it was from Walnut, California. I don't know why something from Walnut, California. I wish my hometown was Walnut, California, so I could just sign all my deep thoughts from Walnut, California. It is intrinsically funny for reasons I cannot describe.
All right. Amanda Cantor writes a story called The Left Hand. A mechanical hand, well-rounded and a little plump. The remains of the red fingernail polish line the cracks and edges of my short and bitten nails and seem to give the illusion of bottled blood, sometimes a bird, sometimes a bunny. My hand seems to have a shadow zoo. For when I clutch my ring and pinky fingers to die, instantly have a bunny. The many dimples and wrinkles in my hand have the look of a pruned-up old person's face. The few calluses on the backside of my hand are harsh and sandpaper-like. Lines on the inside of my left hand convey a complex roadmap of many love, life, and brain.
myths.
I just want you to know that Amanda Cantor of Fountain Valley, California, became a Pilates instructor. And I just think you can know that right here in the left hand in her work. Kristen Jennings wants to know, before you remember something, isn't it forgotten?
She's just spitting truth.
Well, she still is. Nothing is nothing, Kirsten. And these days, she's a paralegal.
I wonder how far Oakland is from Walnut, California.
Those are some deep thoughts, Dave. You should send that to Steffi Rope.
Christy Z. Pagliaro writes, I've always wondered how Mike Brady of the Brady Bunch had perfectly straight hair on one episode, but on the next show, it was all curly. Did Mr. Brady get a perm in Tarot Bang? No, he had naturally curly hair. They just stopped flat ironing it. And I forgot to look her up until just now. And so she is on LinkedIn as Christy Pagliaro Noel, unemployed at unemployed. She hasn't ever posted. Her experience is unemployed. You don't have to join every social network, Christy. You can just not be on LinkedIn.
You've got hair fever.
You do if you want to stalk on LinkedIn. LinkedIn won't let you look without a profile. I know.
Okay.
Dave, you're up.
Oh, what is this? Rucker? Rooker? Rooker?
Yeah.
Sure.
Beth Rooker, Manchester Mo, writes, how come if children are a parent's most prized possession, do they pay the... Let's start that over again. Beth Rooker writes, how come if children are a parent's most prized possession, do they pay other people less than minimum wage to guard their lives? Sounds like somebody got an axe grind against babysitters.
I think this is a babysitter who thinks they're underpaid.
Ooh, twist. Anyway, she sounds like a real bitch.
Next time, we'll be talking about the pop culture topics of the July 1989 issue. Christina profiles Sassy's first ever cover boy, Robert Downey Jr. Pam's patience is tested with a beginner's guide to reggae.
Oh, no. Oh,
God.
Say Anything and Boy George get reviewed and much, much more.
Hey, guess what, you guys? Coast to coast, you can watch My Year of Dicks in the first week of June. From June 3rd to 12th, we'll be screening at the Brooklyn Film Festival, which you can see in person or online. Tickets for the entire online festival are $35. For $10, you can watch the animation films. And on June 5th, we will be having our Los Angeles premiere at the LA Latino International Film Festival. And watch it because, I don't know, maybe it'll never, this might be your only chance. Get in on it.
You can follow this very podcast on Twitter and on Instagram at Listen to Sassy for bonus content. You can also support us on Patreon. It is only $5 a month and you get so many perks, your head will explode. You'll be dead.
You can find more information about our podcast, visual aids for all our episodes, and contact info at listentosassy.com. You can also take our July 89 quiz. It's Rate Your Social Conscience. Then close your eyes for 3 minutes, and then call the hotline at 720-SASSY-GO to leave us a voicemail about how it went or any other sassy-related topic. I'm getting a lot of middle fingers thrown at me, but this is a podcast, so you can't see them. We might play it on a future episode if you call. We love you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
All right, 3 minute pause, and then outro clip.
Dave sent, just shared that picture of me turning around, and I have the other side of this picture, by the way, which I'll find if you're going to post them, because Dave's so mad that we're not going to see the Northern Lights, but we still have the trip ahead of us. He's just fucking stewing.
I wasn't mad we're not going to see the Northern Lights. I was pretty sure we were not going to see the Northern Lights in Hawaii, but yes.
Well, no, we were supposed to see the Northern Lights. That was part of it. Was one of the 2 days or something that we couldn't see something up there.
Stars.
Are you sure?
Just stars. Huh? Just stars. Just Milky stars? Way. You can see the Milky Way very clearly up there.
Maybe that's what it is. I'm remembering.
But here's the thing about the Northern Lights.
Mm-hmm. They're Northern.
Yeah.
Listen to me. I went to a lot of schools and it was not a consistent education.